Make your weekend better at Buena Connection Brewing Company. Fresh craft beer, great vibes, and a tap room perfect for kicking back. Grab a pint, bring friends, and enjoy the weekend at Buena Connection Brewing Company. Go to BuenaConnectionBrewing.com. Hey everyone, welcome to Beverage Chronicles. I'm your host, Gary Monteroso. This is where we kick back, pour something interesting, talk about the stories behind what's in the glass. From craft beer to classic cocktails and everything in between, we're diving into the people, the passion, and the culture that make the beverage world so fascinating. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get into it. Have you ever found yourself at the bar, glancing at the draft list, only to realize you have no idea what differentiates the various types of beers, including classics like ale and lager? Well, don't worry. Everyone has to start somewhere. And you certainly are not alone in wondering what makes these styles unique. Both are tasty, but you'll notice they provide quite different tasting experiences on your palate. When it comes to ales, you can expect a richer and more intricate flavor profile. Many people describe it as a fuller-bodied beer, featuring fruity notes and a noticeable hop bitterness beneath. Ales often have a darker, cloudier appearance and are characterized by strong carbonation, which contributes to the reputation for having a spritzy texture. On the other hand, if you enjoy beers that are crisper and cleaner, lagers are your best bet. These are beers that usually offer a more straightforward flavor profile, with the malt ingredients taking the spotlight. Lagers tend to be brighter and clearer than ales, with just the right level of carbonation to tickle your tongue and awaken your taste buds. Due to their smooth and balanced nature, lagers are often the go-to choice for newcomers or casual beer drinkers. However, for those who consider themselves enthusiasts, craft lagers still provide enough complexity to satisfy your palate. The reason ales and lagers have such unique flavors lies in their brewing processes. Ales are brewed with what's called top fermenting yeast, which thrives in warmer temperatures ranging, let's say from 60 to 75 degrees Fahrenheit, which accelerates the fermentation process. And this not only allows ales to be produced in really just a few days, up to a few weeks, but it also enhances the yeast activity. These compounds are responsible for the fruity and spicy flavors that ales are famous for. Lagers, on the other hand, use what's called bottom fermenting yeast, and they thrive in cooler temperatures, ranging from around maybe 35 to 55 degrees Fahrenheit. The fermentation process is longer, can be a month more, and results in significantly fewer flavor compounds, but that isn't necessarily a drawback. With the yeast's flavors not interfering, the malt and bittering hops can truly stand out without any competition, and that's how lagers achieve their crisp and clean taste. It's fascinating how just a slight change in brewing temperature and a few additional weeks of maturation can create two completely different beers. Both can be fantastic beverages, but now that you're aware of the differences, why not try both? And let your taste buds determine which one you prefer. On with more Beverage Chronicles.
What is up, everybody? Rachel here, aka Brews with Bierkowski, and I am here to talk to you today about some beer history. I'm a certified Cicerone, and I am a historian, and today we're going to be talking about how America changed hops in beer forever. So, let's get nerdy. For most of beer's history, hops were not the star of the show. In fact, for centuries, beer wasn't hopped at all. Before hops became synonymous with beer, brewers created something called gruit. Gruit was a malted alcoholic beverage that used a mixture of local herbs such as yarrow, bog myrtle, rosemary, juniper, and heather to bitter the beer. Every region had its own blend, and every brewer guarded their recipe closely. And then hops entered the picture. Hops had been known medicinally for centuries, but their adoption to being used in beer became much later. One thing that hops can do that herbs cannot do is preserve beer. Hops have natural antibacterial properties that keep beer fresher for longer, especially during transport. That mattered as trade expanded and beer began traveling beyond village borders. One of the earliest and most influential advocates for hops and beer was Hildegard van Bingen, a 12th century abbess, a healer and a scholar. She wrote that hops, quote, prevent putrefaction in beer, and this is the earliest recognition of their preservative power in beer. Her writings helped legitimize hops at a time when gruit was still the dominant drink. By the late Middle Ages, hopped beer began replacing gruit across much of Europe. Beer became more stable, consistent, and easier to transport. Eventually, hops became the defining bittering ingredient in beer itself. For centuries after that, hops played a supporting role. European brewing traditions prized balance and restraint. Germany celebrated noble hops such as Hallertau and Tettnanger, which are herbal, floral, and soft. England leaned onto earthy hops such as Fuggled and Goldings. And the Czech Republic perfected the Saaz hop, which is spicy, delicate, and elegant. Hops were meant to frame the malt, not overpower it. But then America changed everything. In the Pacific Northwest, brewers and farmers realized something special was happening. The Yakima Valley turned out to be an ideal hop-growing land. Long summer days, cold nights, volcanic soil, and glacial irrigation. What began as traditional farming quickly turned into innovation. American hop breeders started crossing European varieties with wild North American hops, and the results were explosive. Instead of subtle herbal aromas and flavors, hops suddenly tasted like grapefruit, pine, mango, passion fruit, peach, and even coconut. And then craft brewers took it further. They didn't just use hops for bitterness, they used them for aroma and flavor, especially through techniques such as dry hopping, where hops are added after the boil to preserve delicate oils. This is what gives modern IPAs their juicy, expressive notes without overwhelming bitterness. And innovation didn't stop there. Brewers now use advanced hop products such as cryohops, which concentrate lupulin, the resin and oil-rich part of the hop cone, which allows for more intense aroma, cleaner flavor, and less vegetal matter in the brewing process. It's science meeting agriculture, meeting with creativity. The result is the American IPA, the New England IPA, the West Coast IPA, a new global hop language, a revolution in how beer smells, tastes, and feels. Today, hops aren't just an ingredient. They're the headline act. Brewers from around the world travel to Yakima each harvest, selecting hops by the lot, chasing specific oils and aromatics like winemakers chase grapes. So when you smell citrus, tropical fruit, or resin leaping from your glass, you're tasting and smelling thousands of years of evolution. From gruit in medieval herb gardens to monasteries, to hop fields, to dry hopping, to cryotechnology, America didn't just join the hop conversation. We rewrote it.
Owen Howard here for Beverage Chronicles. Step into any beer bar in the U.S., and you'll likely witness a familiar sight. Draft lines winding from shiny kegs, each one filled with pasteurized beer, force carbonated using industrial CO2, and kept under pressure to allow the beer to flow into a glass with just a quick pull of the tap handle. However, over in Britain, the pubs have a distinct way of serving beer that feels almost like a ritual in comparison. Cask ale isn't merely a beverage in the UK, it's a cherished tradition, a slice of living history poured with precision behind the bar. If you've ever savored a pint in an English pub, you're familiar with the scene. Those robust hand pump taps, resembling billy clubs, and the gratifying thunk sound as the bartender draws the beer directly from a cask stored in the cool cellar below. As for what is cask ale, don't confuse it with just one style. Cask ales emphasize the process, which is a unique, almost old-world method of conditioning and serving beer. Almost any style can be served in a cask, but the classics include mild ale, pale ale, bitter, golden ale, porter, and stout. These traditional British brews typically have lower alcohol content compared to the bold boozy options that are trendy in American breweries. Nowhere else on the planet does beer culture hold onto this cask tradition quite like the UK. The process itself is intriguing. Beer, still active with yeast, is placed into a 10.8-gallon cask known as a firkin towards the end of fermentation. The yeast gets busy, consuming the last bit of sugar, introducing a gentle amount of CO2 into the mix, and creating flavor notes that are impossible to replicate. Once it's settled, you're left with a pint that's fresh, smooth, and easy to enjoy, with no added gas and absolutely no shortcuts. In the end, cask ale represents beer in its purest form. In England, the whole process is pretty much perfected. When a delivery comes in, the firkin is carefully placed in the cellar and left undisturbed. The beer clears up, the yeast settles down, and when the moment is right, a wooden peg is used to release the extra carbonation. Later on, a tap is inserted and the hand pump brings the beer up to the bar. To some American bar managers, this might seem like a lot of work or even a bit odd. However, a few have taken it on, eager to share a piece of British tradition in the U.S. Many experts believe that these ales connect drinkers to a more traditional, slower-paced way of enjoying beer. The flavors are nuanced and complex, offering both rustic and sophisticated notes. The finest cask beers are served cool, not cold. The ideal temperature is between 50 to 55 degrees Fahrenheit. They should have a light sparkle, never flat, except for a few strong old ales and barley wines that break the norm. Still, it's a hard sell for Americans who are used to their beer ice cold. The misconception that cask ale is always warm and flat is persistent, and changing that perception requires effort. A beer served at cask temperature with natural carbonation offers itself in a unique way, often even better than the typical keg or canned version. Cask ale has had its ups and downs in the UK. It was once the chosen pour in every pub, but it almost disappeared in the 1970s, when big brewing companies pushed for more industrial, shelf-stable keg options. That's when CAMRA, the Campaign for Real Ale, came into play, a grassroots organization that revived cask beer and ignited a renaissance. Will cask ale ever become popular in the States? Can it break free from its current niche status here? The movement is small but on the rise. More taprooms and festivals are diving in and offering cask-conditioned ales, but it's still a bit of a challenge. Many folks in the industry just haven't caught on yet. While almost everyone in the UK is familiar with cask ale, the average American drinker is still trying to understand what all the excitement is about. Convincing drinkers in the U.S. to give cask ale a shot requires some persuasion, tastings, marketing, and a bit of teaching. One brewer put it like this: you look them straight in the eye and say, "This is how God intended you to enjoy beer."
That's it for this week's edition of Beverage Chronicles. Hope you enjoyed the stories and flavors we explored today. There's always more to discover in every glass. If you like what you heard, be sure to follow us and go to beveragechronicles.com for the latest information. I'm Gary Monteroso, inviting you to raise a glass to good company, good conversation, and the endless adventure of discovering your next favorite drink. Until next time, stay curious, and as always, enjoy responsibly.